You have aligned to the Wisconsin Department of Corrections Secretary Kevin Carr on the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Wisconsin has more than 19,000 adults in state correctional facilities. As of the most recent census, more than 500 inmates are currently in quarantine, according to the corrections COVID dashboard, and 32 inmates have died from COVID in this pandemic. Is your loved one incarcerated? How are they doing in these times? 800-642-1234. Corrections Secretary Kevin Carr, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate, and it's great to be with you again.
Good morning. So the Department of Corrections started allowing in-person visits again on July 6th. How do these visits compare to what it was like before the pandemic?
Interestingly, the rate of in-person visitation is roughly 50 to 60% of what it was prior to the pandemic. What we found is one of the most popular, strategies that we implemented to afford the persons in our care to maintain contact with their loved ones was Zoom visits, using technology to enable folks to stay connected. That remains extremely popular. As you know, a number of our facilities are located in various areas around the state, and the virtual visits enable people to visit without having to engage in those long trips.
Inmates being farther away from their families, these families have been using Zoom, and that seems to be something that is really carried forward in this pandemic.
Absolutely.
Are visitors required to be vaccinated?
No, they're not. But, you know, following the CDC guidance, we still require that visitors to our facilities remain masked, and we have our visiting room set up in a socially distanced way. So those are the requirements for people to visit our facilities.
Can you be a little more specific? Are inmates able to hug their family members, for instance?
No, they're not at this time.
How long is it taking to schedule these in-person visits?
Well, people, they can schedule a visit the way that they always have by contacting the individual facilities. And we are working on a computerized scheduling program so people can utilize technology to conveniently schedule themselves for a visit. But that won't be in place until early fall.
How are Zoom visits facilitated in terms of how these families log on, how these visits are scheduled?
Well, with the Zoom visits, it's remarkable. We have dedicated space in each facility where we have the necessary technology, the computer system, the video screen, what have you, for the persons on our end of the visit to schedule a visit with their loved one. And on the other end, all you need is a cell phone or a computer screen or a tablet in order for you to log in on Zoom to be able to conduct the visit with your loved one.
We're talking with Kevin Carr, who's Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Corrections, as we check in on pandemic protocols and how facilities are responding. You can join in. Do you have a loved one in one of Wisconsin's correctional facilities? Have you been able to visit them? Perhaps you used a Zoom visit. Will you continue to do that or make in-person visits? 800-642-1234. Secretary, Wisconsin's correctional institutions had almost 11,000 cases of COVID, 32 COVID-related deaths at last check, but the pandemic appears to now not be under control with the Delta variant. What is the status currently in your facilities?
I'm glad you asked that question, Kate. Currently, as of this morning, we only have one active case among persons in our care. And I'm happy to say that that number has been zero on many days over the last month. In fact, during the last month or two, we've not had more than two or three active cases on any day since mid-June. But like many communities around the state, our institutions saw a high positive case rate last fall, and then those numbers started to fall at the beginning of this year. And after vaccinations began, they continued to drop even more.
What do you think is making the difference? Is it the vaccinations?
I certainly do. And I can tell you that right now, the current vaccination rate of persons in our care is just about 70%. As I heard earlier on your program, statewide, that rate is just under 50%. So I believe that the higher rate of vaccinations in our facility is definitely helping us curb the prevalence of the virus in our system.
You have hundreds of inmates, though, in quarantine. What does that entail?
Well, that's because we have at our reception center at Dodge Correctional, we take in about 180 persons a week. And, you know, they come from county jails all over the state. So as a matter of protocol, and it's a recommendation to quarantine these folks initially upon arrival because we don't know what their vaccination status is all the time, and we want to make sure that they don't have COVID and spread it throughout the system. So as you can imagine, if you're taking in almost 200 people a week, you know, in a month, you know, that's 800 people. But as people get out of quarantine, you know, you're putting more people back in. And that's why there's always around 400 or 500 people on quarantine.
Why do you think the vaccination status is in question? Shouldn't you be able to just look up to see if someone is vaccinated or not?
Sure, but we do use the registry to verify that, and we have asked the local county jails to provide us with that information if they have it. But oftentimes, you know, that information is not readily available to our staff. So we have to determine that upon admission.
What have been the biggest barriers to vaccinating inmates and staff?
Well, you know, realistically, I think the same things that are impacting the general population, you know, questions about side effects and vaccine hesitancy issues that have a historical nature, just a general lack of mistrust. But as I said earlier, 70% of our folks in our care have decided to get the vaccine. And just this past week, we started to provide the persons in our care with more information about the Delta variant because of, you know, the increase in the number of cases statewide. And we wanted to provide people with as much information as we could in order to try to change their minds about getting the vaccine. We're not satisfied with 70%. I'd love to see it a whole lot higher. But, you know, and we're working towards that through education and communication with the persons in our care and our staff.
We have Correction Secretary Kevin Carr as we check in on how correctional facilities are managing amid the Delta variant and at this point in the pandemic. Are you a current or former inmate in one of Wisconsin's prisons? How do you think the state is managed in these times? What services do you think that inmates should have access to? Join in, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute with Secretary Carr here on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking with Department of Corrections Secretary Kevin Carr. Across all the state correctional facilities, nearly 11,000 inmates have tested positive for COVID since the pandemic started. More than 2,600 Corrections Department staff have had COVID. That's the latest from DOC's COVID dashboard. What do you want to know about vaccines, quarantine, isolation, conditions inside facilities? Do you work in corrections? What would you like to share? Join in 800-642-1234. Corrections Secretary Kevin Carr is with us for about 9 more minutes. Secretary, as you offer these remote video visits to inmates and family, how long do you expect this to continue?
Well, one of the lessons learned during the pandemic was how we could leverage the use of technology to our benefit to provide more services to the persons in our care. And that's exactly what the Zoom visits have provided us. But we are also leveraging technology in a way to provide more programming to persons in our care and on supervision around the state, meaning that if you live in northern Wisconsin and you're on supervision and you require a certain type of programming that's not available in that area, we're providing the opportunity for those individuals to get that programming virtually. Some counseling we're doing virtually in our facilities, and telehealth is another thing that we're also utilizing now. Those benefits or those technological aspects of how we operate are going to continue well into the future.
And last time we talked, you had talked about how you've had to really curtail normal activities, normal in air quotes, like around education and programming and recreation, in order to kind of not move inmates around. Have any of those picked back up?
Absolutely. As of July 6th, we have begun to normalize our operations throughout the system. So that means that we're engaging in work release, we're doing project crews. A project crew is a group of folks in our care that go outside of the secure confines to perform some sort of community service, like when there's bad weather and a whole bunch of trees have been knocked down or something like that. We perform those types of things. We're going back out into the community now. So we have resumed education, recreation, most programming, and as I said earlier, work release and our project crews.
There was a Pew study recently reported that the pandemic has highlighted how expensive it is for inmates to call home. The prison telecommunications industry, it generates an estimated $1.4 billion a year. What is Wisconsin doing to reduce the cost to inmates in keeping in touch with their loved ones?
Well, during the pandemic, we have been offering 2 free phone calls every week for every person in our care. So that's one thing that we're doing, and we have not changed that policy yet. The revenue issue as it relates to persons in our care making phone calls is controlled by the legislature. It is actually in the law that we have to, charge folks in our care for using the telephone to a certain degree. But to the extent that we can provide free phone calls, we are.
We're talking with Kevin Carr, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Corrections, which supervises more than 19,000 incarcerated people. You can join in with your questions, especially amid COVID, 800-642-1234. Secretary, let's look at vendors. The Corrections Department decided last month to reduce the number of vendors it contracts with to supply goods to inmates. And instead of 3, you're going down to 1, the California-based Union Supply Group. Why is this happening?
Well, there are multiple reasons, Kate, but mainly efficiency, which we believe will lead to better service for the persons in our care and get a better warranty response on behalf of the persons in our care from the vendors. Previously, when we had 3 vendors, and we currently do right now up until October 1st, we had staff that had to act as a go-between for the persons in our care and three different vendors. Now we'll have a single point of contact for DOC and persons in our care to address concerns with their orders. Second, we wanted to simplify the ordering process and have a standardized catalog for the persons in our care and their loved ones. DOC vendors can update catalogs every 6 months, and with three vendors, we had three different catalogs that were changing twice a year. We want to simplify that process for the persons in our care and have a standardized look with a clear ordering path for the purchase of approved items. We believe that that is going to ultimately provide the best service for the persons in our care with an expanded catalog of items that they can choose from.
But, you know, competition is what holds down prices in our economies, and advocates are worried that one vendor will lead to more expensive prices and slower delivery for essential items like toothpaste, like shampoo. What will the department do to ensure that price hikes don't happen?
Well, we have negotiated a contract that we think addresses that issue adequately. We do not want any price gouging or the folks in our care to pay more than they have to for anything. We are advocating on their behalf in this contract to ensure that they get the things that they want at a reasonable price.
Does switching from multiple vendors still comply with state administrative code?
It absolutely does. In fact, there's no question that, this was a competitive process where it was very clear that our intention was to have a single vendor contract. The three vendors competed, and two of the three were not awarded the contract. Now, one of the vendors submitted a protest to DOC.
The Milwaukee vendor,
The Milwaukee vendor did, and it was denied by DOC. And then it was reviewed by the Department of Administration to see if, there was anything wrong with the process and whether the award was done properly. And the appeal to DOA was denied. So, the process was a fair and open process. And, I think if the Milwaukee vendor had won, we wouldn't be having this discussion. But Union Supply, even though you said it's a California-based company, and which it is, under the administrative rules, they are considered a Wisconsin company because they have a warehouse here, and they happen to employ people from Wisconsin.
What about families who can't pay with a credit card or who aren't tech-savvy to shop online this way?
Well, there are several alternatives to for a person to use in order to, if you're wanting to buy something for your loved one who's in custody, you can use Visa, MasterCard, cashier's check, money order, personal checks, and cash through any participating ACE Cash Express location. And the folks in our care, they will be able to have any type of support that they need in order to facilitate them accessing the property purchase system.
Switching gears here in the last minute we have together, Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake detention centers had been ordered to close by July 1, but as of the latest census, Lincoln Hills continued to house 51 boys, Copper Lake 9 girls. What do you expect the state will be able to close these facilities?
Well, this is a complicated subject with a lot of history, but the short version is that we're waiting on legislative action. In 2019, this administration submitted a plan to the legislature for two new youth facilities, which they, rejected. Then, in the next budget cycle, the one that we're in right now, earlier this year, Governor Evers proposed $45 million for a new secure youth facility in Milwaukee County, and that was also rejected. Now, they did, however, allocate $4 million for the Department of Corrections to start doing design and development and site acquisition, which we hope to complete in the near future, next few months, to be honest with you. But the governor and the Department of Corrections, we want to see those new facilities built as soon as possible so we can get those kids closer to home, where they can get culturally competent programming, and we can have a more diverse workforce.
Secretary Carr, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Kevin Carr, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Corrections. News update is next on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. The Wisconsin Medical Society is the largest physician organization in the state with more than 10,000 members. The society announced earlier this month it's urging all healthcare employers to require their workers to get the COVID vaccine. Do you work in healthcare? How do you feel about healthcare organizations mandating the vaccine? How do you want the physician community to interact with state lawmakers? What is their role in driving policy decisions? 800-642-1234 to join in. Dr. David Letzer is a Brookfield-based infectious disease specialist, chairs the Wisconsin Medical Society's COVID task force. Dr. Letzer, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. State health authorities say almost 53% now the state has received at least one dose of the vaccine. How is our state doing in distributing the vaccine to more people?
We're improving. We've got a little ways to go. There's, you know, some geographic pockets that are doing less well than others. So there's some ways to go to improve, but we're at least headed in that direction.
All right. So Governor Evers told WISN-TV on Tuesday that he believes we're in a good place.
Well, you know, the good news is we're in a good place. The bad news is we still got a whole bunch of people that still can get a shot. They really haven't thought about it.
Okay. So what is your assessment? Are we in a good place?
I mean, you know, good's a relative term. So from epidemiologist and infection control, we want to see things in a better place. Are we good relative to where we were in the past? Absolutely. Are we good relative to where we need to be? I'm not so sure, and there's some room for improvement. So is the glass half full, half empty?
Do scientists know how many people would need to be vaccinated in order to effectively end the threat of COVID in Wisconsin?
You know, that's a good question. And regretfully, it's a moving target that is impacted by the predominant COVID strain in the community. So the numbers that we heard, you know, with the original ancestral strain or the alpha strain was maybe 70%. Now with Delta, what we're hearing is 80%, even as high, and some people say 90, but 80%. So that is a little bit of a moving target. I think in the 70 to 80% range, depending on the strain.
Well, you know, and that's a big difference. 70 to 80 is a big jump considering as you look at the day-to-day numbers of people getting vaccinated.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. And it's not an exact science. And plus, there's, you know, a percentage of patients or individuals who have had COVID and are also immune. So I'm not sure really 80% of the population fully has to be vaccinated because there may be some natural immunity from having the disease. And so that's some of the ambiguity that, you know, you mentioned. So it's not exact science. We can't say if we hit this number, we are going to have herd immunity and it's done with. It's an approximation, which is not always fun to talk about.
Well, let's look at mandates. UW Health, yeah. SSM, Previa, Aurora Health, all requiring employees to get the vaccine. What does the vaccination rate look like among healthcare workers?
Yeah, it varies a little bit by organization, and it does vary by job description. It does seem that physicians have the highest level of vaccination, many organizations in the 90%. But when we start to look at some nurses and some other job descriptions, it can be in the 60%. So it can be disappointingly low. So on average, I would say in the 60% range if you take all comers together.
What is keeping some healthcare workers from getting the vaccine?
Boy, I'd love to know that, the answer to that. You know, when I make my rounds, I'd like to, you know, talk to different healthcare providers and see if they're not vaccinated, why it is. And it, there's some variation, you know, as you know, some people want it to be FDA approved and it's still under investigation. Some have fears that I think have been driven by social media in terms of fertility issues and things. So I don't think there's one simple answer. I think it's a combination of multiple different reasons.
What is the Delta variant doing to hospitals in Wisconsin and healthcare workers?
Well, I mean, for sure, our hospitalized patient numbers are increasing and significantly over the last few weeks and for sure month. I think in terms of, so we're seeing more patients in the intensive care unit, more patients admitted. And it should be mentioned, these are unvaccinated individuals. We are, it is 98 to 99% unvaccinated. And then in terms of the healthcare workers, it's a stress. It's a psychological stress. You know, the surges were emotionally, physically taxing for healthcare workers. And, you know, people that I talk to, having another surge really presents, you know, difficulties.
Some healthcare workers feel that they should not be forced to take the vaccine. And state's president, Chris Kapinga of Delafield, released a statement telling workers to stick to their beliefs and not give in. Why do you think mandates are necessary?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly understand where there's, you can come on different sides of this equation in terms of individual perspective, you know, but we're really now talking about a social good. We're talking about what's needed to be done to protect patients, what's needed to be done to really protect our healthcare workers. Like you mentioned, well, what percent are vaccinated? Well, 60% are vaccinated, and we start seeing more COVID in healthcare workers, which we are beginning to see, and then they are unable to work. That impacts the workforce. It impacts the ability to deliver care. So there's multiple reasons why mandates are really needed as a good in terms of providing health care. And given the rates, I think regretfully mandates are needed.
UW-Madison, it has more than 45,000 students, over 21,000 employees. And full disclosure, I'm one of them here at WPR. It revised its campus masking policy last week. They're required in campus buildings. What advice would you give to very large employers, the UW, as its next step in COVID protocols to keep cases in check?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is, this is an evolving pandemic, and things do change. And that's hard for all of us to stomach because we want it to be over, you know, and it's difficult for us to have one recommendation a few months ago where if you're vaccinated and you don't need masks, now all of a sudden, you know, CDC comes out and says, you know, even if you're vaccinated, you should wear masks. I think the thing is really social distancing and masking are part of preventing the spread of COVID-19, especially the Delta variant. And the thing is, there is likely to be another variant. I mean, it's not like we're done with variants. If you look at where variants come from, you look at vaccination rates globally, there's more variants on the way. So I think doing the common sense things of social distancing, ventilation in classrooms when possible, and masking really should be part of fighting the COVID pandemic. And I would say institutions should stick with that.
We're talking
the way out, though, is vaccination, though. I do want to emphasize, I mean, it's masking and social distancing, not that they're not important, but our way out of this pandemic is going to be through vaccination.
We're talking with Dr. David Letzer, who's a Brookfield-based infectious disease specialist, chairs the Wisconsin Medical Society's COVID-19 task force. You can join in. There's a line for you. How is the recent spike in infection rates affecting your workplace? Did the spread of the Delta variant change things for you? Did you recently decide to put a mask on after not wearing one for some time? How do you decide when to wear a mask? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Letzer, should the UW's COVID safety measures be subject to the approval of a legislative committee? Should legislative policy makers have the final say?
You know, that's not my area of expertise. So I'm not really the person that's going to be able to answer legalities in terms of statutes and state statutes. But what I will comment on is that we really need not to have the pandemic be in the a political discussion. And I think that's where it becomes problematic, that what the data shows, what's best for our community is fairly clear and straightforward. And regretfully, politics has kind of colored what we need to do.
Governor Evers said last week he has no plans to issue another statewide mask mandate after the Supreme Court decided that the governor and state health officials overstepped their emergency powers. Do you think the lack of a statewide mask mandate will prolong the pandemic?
I would say vaccination is what's going to prolong or not prolong the pandemic. Mask mandates are one part of fighting the pandemic. I don't think in the end that's going to be the sword that the pandemic will either survive or not survive on. I still believe in masks. I think masks should be done. They're simple. They're easy. They make sense. I mean, I think we need to use common sense. But in the end, I really think it's vaccination.
One more question here on masking.
Sure.
Should vaccinated people wear masks in outdoor spaces or in crowded spaces like concerts or festivals?
Yeah, you know, and these are great questions. And this is where, you know, I mentioned earlier, some of the science is evolving, or there really isn't full science to guide us. And plus, we have a variant now whose behavior may be different than some of the previous strains we've seen. So, you know, we're struggling to give the public the right answer. I think the CDC came up with guidelines that they believed is the right answer. In the end, I think common sense really does play a role. So if you're outdoors, it's well ventilated, you're not crowded, I think masks are less essential. Mm-hmm. If you're in a crowded space, like people were like at the Deer Park for the basketball, and you're packed in, even though you're outdoors, in that setting, mask would be helpful. So I don't think there's a blanket statement, regretfully, that we can say you have to always do this.
We have infectious disease specialist David Letzer, who chairs the Wisconsin Medical Society's COVID-19 task force. How is the recent spike in infections affecting you? Did the spread of the Delta variant change how you go about your plans? What are your thoughts on mask requirements or vaccine mandates? When and where should they be mandatory? Still time to talk about this. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more Stay Cap here on the Ideas Network. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The level of community transmission is now high in more than half of Wisconsin's counties. That's according to the CDC's COVID tracker. The Wisconsin Medical Society has more than 10,000 physician members and is a prominent advocacy voice on healthcare policy at the Capitol. We have Dr. David Letzer, who chairs the Wisconsin Medical Society's COVID task force, with us for about nine more minutes. Mary in Viroqua is with us. Hi, Mary.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for getting the word out and continuing to make this message be known. I think by now we all know we have lots of variants that are coming our way and that we need to mask up. I'm on my way to the hospital where I work, and I'm a therapist, and I mask up every day. So it's kind of the new normal, I feel. And I think that just like we do things for climate change, like recycle, and we try to protect the planet and, you know, do some things that are different than we did 20, 30, 40 years ago, I think the new normal is that we need to wear masks. We're healthier because of that. We're vaccinated because of that. And, you know, the reality is that people do die from this virus. And we hear those stories behind the scenes, at least at my hospital. And because of HIPAA and confidentiality, you can't really talk about that. And so who wants to get sick? And who wants to get anybody sick? I just think it's so important to continue to mask and look at that, you know, kind of it's the new normal for a while yet.
Mary, thank you. Dr. Letzer, this is the new normal.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate your perspective. Thank you, Mary. I fully agree with you. I think for now it is a new normal. There is an extra benefit that's not mentioned. You know, we had one of the lowest influenza A incidents in a long time. So there are other viruses that are transmitted that masks may protect. And so there is some secondary benefit as well. But I think she is right. I think for now it is a new normal.
Let's go to Laura now in La Crosse. Laura, hi.
Hey, good morning. I am just severely concerned about the school children as we move forward into the beginning of this school year, when they have, each school district has no right to put in a mandatory mask wearing. It is highly recommended, and that this virus, granted, the children are at very low risk, but the increased transmission is going to increase the amount of variants out there, and it's going to make it worse for everyone. So the DPI or the state has to do something in order to support these school districts.
Dr. Letzer, what about children and not having to mask up?
You know, that's a great point, because as we know, especially children less than 12 are not eligible for vaccination. So masking may be one of the main ways of protecting kids in the classroom. Ventilation is also important. As the task force, we are going to look into this issue, and it's the number one agenda item for our next meeting. So hopefully I'll have some more insights on that. But I think that's a very good point in terms of what we need to do to protect kids, especially who are not eligible for vaccination.
What do you tell parents, though, who are kind of in this holding pattern, if you will, very concerned about sending kids back to the classroom, and yet we know that kids are falling further and further behind?
I think everybody agrees kids need to be in the classroom, especially at a certain age. There's just no ways around it. We just need to figure out what's the safest way we can get kids in the classroom. They got to be in the classroom, especially younger kids, elementary school kids. We just have to look at it. What's the safest way we can do it? But they've got to be in the classroom.
Let's go to Rosa now in Waterford. Rosa, good morning.
My husband and I received a call from our former boss. We're still in contact with him. And the boss said that his friend's son is in the hospital with COVID, even though his son has had the two shots. And what's interesting is the family noticed that unvaccinated was put on the son's chart, and they said, told the doctor, no, he was vaccinated, and the doctor refused to change that. I'm curious to know, is there some kind of order from the CDC telling doctors they have to put unvaccinated for all incoming patients who have COVID?
That's a good question. And the answer is no. So if you're vaccinated, legally, that is supposed to be registered through the Wisconsin State Registry for Immunization. So that must have been some glitch, because that his vaccination status should have been apparent through that immunization site, which all medical organizations have direct access to. So no, there's no guidance from the CDC that says we should have them put down as unvaccinated or not. And again, there's a state registry that should be registered. I can't explain why that didn't occur.
Rosa, thank you. Dr. Letzer, what is your sense of breakthrough infections and what you're seeing?
Yeah, so there's a difference between breakthrough, and breakthrough is almost a misnomer, infections versus disease. And that's an important distinction that we need to make and really get further understanding of breakthrough. But in short, in the hospital, for the only patients that we really see who have been vaccinated and get disease, I mean, they're sick from the virus, are ones who are on some medication that lowers their immune system, so they're unlikely to respond or may not respond to the vaccination. Now, that being said, there's going to be a rare exception, but in general, disease, less than 1% are going to be in the hospital. Infection's different. So if someone is exposed to the virus and may have very mild symptoms or is tested as part of just exposure, that doesn't mean the vaccine failed. The vaccine really is created, and we're not going to go into it because of time, but really the way it works, it's not going to prevent the virus from getting into the cells in your nose. It's going to prevent the virus from fully replicating and causing severe disease. So where the vaccine clearly works is when is disease, which means the patients are sick. Just getting the virus and having it doesn't mean the vaccine has failed.
Dr. David Letzer, I want to land here on misinformation. And, you know, we've seen Republican U.S. Senator Ron Johnson criticized for promoting the work of vaccine skeptics. And I'm just wondering, how does promoting sources of misinformation affect the distribution of the vaccine and uptake?
I think it's huge. I think, you know, we all live in our kind of culture bubbles, for lack of a better term. And there's pockets of misinformation that people use to support not getting vaccinated. And I think it's one of the major issues that allow people kind of persist in their misperceptions is, you know, some of the social media and individuals who are perpetuating these misinformation.
Dr.
The data is pretty straightforward.
Yeah, Dr. Letzer, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. I enjoyed it.
Dr. David Letzer is a Brookfield-based infectious disease specialist, chairs the Wisconsin Medical Society's COVID-19 Task Force. Just ahead, we invite you to our caller-only hour on climate change. What topics are you interested in hearing related to the environment? 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.